Great. Good evening. I call the Tuesday, May 19th, 2020 Kitsap County Planning Commission meeting to order. And it appears we have a quorum. I know Commissioner Allen was hoping to be here, but she could not make it this evening. Although she sent us a picture of a beautiful baby grandchild, which is fantastic. And I believe all commissioners are here either telephonically or by video, except Commissioner Murphy, correct?
Yes, but he should be joining us shortly. He
okay.
confirmed just right before the meeting. So.
Okay, great. So let's go ahead and start with item A, introductions, and we'll start in the south end and work our way north.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Ed Galloway, South Kitsap.
Richard.
Okay, so I'm Richard Chaddock, and I'm from Central Kitsap.
I'm Alan Beam. I'm from Central Kitsap.
Okay, Mike Eliason, Central Kitsap.
Joe Phillips, North Kitsap.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
And then we'll wait and see if Commissioner Murphy joins us later. By the way, Commissioner Phillips, great background. I see you're at the Golden Gate, I believe.
That's the choice today.
I was looking online. There's a whole assortment out there of backgrounds you can choose. It's amazing the ingenuity people have nowadays.
Well, you can even add your own photograph background, too.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, item B, virtual meeting protocol. We're all familiar with the protocol now. If anybody's having any technical difficulty, please message Amanda so that we know and that you can participate. And then later during the meeting, when we get to general public comment, we'll go over the basic rules for raising your hand and how you can participate in this evening's meeting. Okay. Item C, adoption of agenda. Has everybody had a chance to look over tonight's meeting agenda? And if so, the chair entertains a motion to approve the agenda as presented, or if you have an amendment.
Move to present to adopt the agenda as presented.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion and second to adopt the agenda as presented. All those in favor say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Item D, adoption of meeting minutes. Meeting of April 21st, 2020. Any corrections or additions?
Move to adopt the minutes of the meeting for the 22nd.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the meeting minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, and I probably should have interjected. It's no big deal, but at the very end, it was the only item I caught on page 5. At the very end, Amanda, it says, where you normally have vote and then you have the total yes and no and motion carries. It's part of the template. It just says comma and then AM seconds. So I think you can just delete that because then it says all in favor. Just a minor correction.
Thank you.
Scribner's, so it's not a problem. So we can continue with the motion. So we have a motion and second to approve. All those in favor say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, motion carries. Meeting minutes of May 12th, 2020. Any additions or corrections? Okay, hearing none, we'll entertain a motion to approve. Commissioner Murphy has joined us, 5:33 p.m. Welcome.
To approve the minutes as presented.
Minutes of the meeting from the second, was it the second?
May 12th.
May 12th.
Yep. Okay. We have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion second to approve. All those in favor signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions?
Spence abstains.
Yep. Got one abstention. Is there a second?
I missed that meeting.
Looks like Jim and I both. Yep. This is Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Yep. I heard two abstentions.
Got him.
Okay, motion carries. Item E, general public comment. This is the opportunity for the members of the public to present any issue of concern to the Planning Commission. If anybody wants to present information, we're happy to hear you. We limit comments to 3 minutes unless there's a special request by the commission to extend the time. Do we have any, do you want to explain the hand raising, Amanda?
I can. So again, raising your hand, if you're a caller, you can just hit *9. For those logged in online, you can just click the button that says raise hand. But I see we only have one attendee at the moment, and that's BCAT. And I don't, although I guess they could raise their hand as BCAT.
Okay, any public comment? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the next agenda item. Item F, announcements. This is a new line item in our agenda. It's to accomplish a couple of different purposes. One, if there is extensive public comment at a future meeting, it gives the planning commissioners the opportunity to respond either individually or as a group to any member of the public that speaks. And this would be particularly helpful if it's an agenda item that engenders a lot of passionate comments in the future, so that you're not having a debate at the podium between the commission and the people presenting the testimony. It's also helpful so that individual commissioners have one point during the meeting agenda to present any issue that may be of interest. And as you note, it's prior to the action item. So if there's any concerns about action items before you get into the substantive issues, we'd have the opportunity to address those prior to moving right into the agenda items. And then last but not least, although not required, it gives staff the opportunity twice in the agenda to present information. And there have been times in the past, and staff time's valuable, where staff members have to sit through the entire meeting before the very end during good of the order where they can present a few comments or address any issues. So this would now give staff two opportunities during the agenda to present any comments either early or at the end of the meeting and then be able to continue with their staff work. So this is our first run at it. We'll see how it goes. And if it goes well, we'll keep it. And if you guys choose to and you don't like it, we'll get rid of it in future meetings. So are there any staff reports, any commission reports or comments?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple observations.
Okay, Commissioner Bean.
Whenever I get into a new topic, and we're going into a new topic here on stormwater, the first question I ask is to myself is, what do we got? Why is the system that we're using now not working? And what changes are going to be made to address that? The other thing I look at is, and this one seems to be have a lot of it, is this appears to be a regulation by reference. So you go through there and do everything for reference, and the good news is they give what the reference is, but the bad news is that anytime any of those references changes, we've just changed all the county codes. And I'm not sure that that's a right way of going about business. The next question would be, and it's particularly important in these days, is how is this change going to help improve the area of affordable housing? How is it going to make affordable housing more affordable? And this one looks like we're piling on more and more requirements for professional engineers and professional surveys, and it doesn't look like we're going in the right direction. Thank you, sir.
Okay. You bet. Thanks for sharing. And I'm hearing two things from you. One is a policy related issue and the other is a procedural. And so I know we have an agenda setting meeting coming up with staff. So I'll talk with staff outside of the meeting tonight, if that's okay with you. And we'll at least talk about the procedural aspect of it. And then that brings up another point. I'm sure all of you have received the email that Amanda sent out that shows our current work plan and our timeline this year. And of course, it's been a recurring issue in recent months because we have so many big topics and they're not all coming at once, but the timelines are intersecting. And because of that, I wanted to find out if any of the commissioners have any concerns about the timeline that was sent out. Because as you know, we've got three major issues coming up, particular at our meeting 2 weeks from now. We're going to be tackling stormwater, We should probably, or we may approve findings of fact tonight with the road standards, but we've got this zoning use table, we've got stormwater, and then we might start the vacation rentals work study before we move into that process. So are any of the commissioners concerned about all of this coming relatively at the same time?
Would you like me to put the
Sure, that'd be great.
Screen? Would that be helpful? All right, let's see if I can get this to work on.
Is an option to have more meetings?
I think we'd have to get the response from staff about it. As you know, it can be problematic at times, not only because of their work schedule, but also public notice requirements, advertising, that type of thing. But as we know, we can't call special meetings. The last meeting we had was a special meeting because we had to reschedule the regular meeting date. So it is possible if the commission members and right. and the group believes we need to have a meeting. Okay,
there's Boy, Amanda, I just lost everyone. Is that...
Are you seeing my screen?
I'm just seeing, all I'm seeing is your screen. I don't see anybody.
It's because I'm sharing it, yeah. Everybody will they'll come back on when I close my screen. So.
Okay, so.
You can select what view you want on the upper right-hand corner.
Upper right-hand corner, view options.
Yeah, one of those view options will get you more people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Richard, go to side mode.
That'll help you. Participants, for a lot of us, bottom middle, there's participants, chat, share screen, record. If you click participants, it should split your screen between what Amanda is sharing and lots of cute.
There we go. Okay. Yeah, I did.
Got it. Great.
I just had a quick comment, Mr. Chair, on what you raised. It strikes to me, can anyone hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I hear it.
Strikes me that actually compared to past years, we've been dealing with the critical areas ordinance or comp plan amendments, that this isn't that heavy a schedule compared to what we've dealt with in the past. In fact, I assume Angie, we're not gonna do any comp plan amendments in 2020. Is there any thought about having a comp plan look in 2021?
So far, the guidance we've received from the commissioners when we have discussed the topic, because as the Planning Commission knows, our 2019 comp plan docket etched into 2020. So by statute under growth management, we can only amend the comp plan once a year. The board officially took action on the 2019 docket at the end of April. So in theory, they cannot take action on the 2020 docket until April 2021. In addition to COVID has happened, and as well as we have two vacancies in our long range planning division, and we have plenty of current mandated projects, one that we have yet to start and need to start, which is the Shoreline Master Program. We need to continue to move on progress with the Bilba Lands Report, which is statutorily required for Kitsap County as well as the use table is also on the plate of a very limited staff. I have a supervisor, two vacant long range planning positions that potentially may be frozen under COVID economic conditions, as well as one planner to do all this work. So right now I don't have a lot of staff members or full-time FTEs to help move that forward. That will be my message to the commissioners, that I just don't have the staffing resources to consider an optional docket process this year. In addition to another thing that's on our plate is because of the Dickey Pit site specific was approved. It also had a number of conditions that should be negotiated as part of the developer's agreement, which is on our to-do list as well. And that needs to be completed by, don't quote me, I want to say 2021 next year, but I might be wrong. It might got revised to 2022. So those are all the things we're trying to balance, what is mandated, what we need to do, like code edits, desperately need to do, and trying to balance that with the available resources we have.
And so the takeaway for people asking about, what can we do in terms of, as the question was, what do we do about affordable housing? What can we do anything between now and 2021, we're going to take another look at comp and optionals. Do we want to do in 2021? That's what we should be telling people.
Well, again, I think what's another layer to this is the Kitsap County Human Services Department, as well as the City of Bremerton Community Development Block Grant, just released their affordable housing study. I participated on a good portion of that study. As part of that, we did recognize some of the data limitations and how helpful that would be under a Growth Management Act consideration. So for example, without the scope or the budget and the contract to really modify census tract information, it didn't really get down to the UGA levels. That would have been very helpful for future planning efforts. But that report did note that additional 25,000 plus units of all affordable housing ranges were needed by 2036. Prior to COVID conditions, we did have talked with Kitsap Building Association on what code amendments could look like to relieve and provide affordable housing needs, in addition to process improvements from lot creation all the way to building permits, and how we could streamline that process if you met certain criteria under affordable housing. And some of the ideas were bouncing around, okay, if the board identified a resolution of this is the criteria, they would skip or expedite certain applications for affordable housing. That's what gone. Unfortunately, COVID has reprioritized everybody's efforts, and we've been so focused on opening phase one existing construction sites. Now we're focused on opening phase two, which is new construction. So their permit wasn't issued prior to March 23rd. So again, it's just reprioritizing those needs, but it's definitely a concern while we're in COVID. I know I have family trying to look for a home right now, and there's just nothing available. So that is just all those things moving around, and we're trying to balance moving key elements forward, as well as our mandated functions that we have sought relief through our Washington State Association of Counties, sought relief to the governor's office of delaying certain mandated requirements because of COVID, and what that has changed in our operation as what is our new normal going on.
Okay. Any other commissioners have any comments about the work schedule? Unless we have any objections, we're going to continue with it. And as Commissioner Shattuck mentioned, in some prior years, it was a lot more complex. But we want to make sure everybody feels like they've given their due diligence to the materials and has enough time with staff members. Okay. Any other announcements by members of the commission or staff? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to item G, deliberations and recommendation, Title 11, road standards code update. And we'll turn it over to John Brand. First, if I could, John, we've got you there, but I want to find out from Amanda, because our public hearing ended at 4:30 p.m., I think it was a motion that Commissioner Shattuck made. Did we get any written testimony?
We did not receive any written testimony.
Okay, and the public hearing is closed, so we're open to discussion and deliberation. Okay. So, John, do you have any other final comments before we begin our deliberation?
No, not really. I appreciate the opportunity to be here again tonight, and just as a review, this is we're talking about the amendments to Title 11 of the County Code, which has to do with roads, bridges, and highways. Most of the amendments were just good housekeeping, and I know that you guys have reviewed the other amendments, but the heart of the amendment is the update of the county road standards. We've gone through SEPA, we've gone through the Department of Commerce, not received any comments during those two processes. Met with you folks on April 21st and again on May 12th. One thing, Commissioner, is, and I think you got the email or it's in the findings of fact, is that we did a little bit of additional homework on that planter strip question that you had, and we are recommending that we reduce it from 6 to 4, just be more consistent with cities, and so we're recommending that. But other than that, we appreciate your support. We appreciate the time that you've spent with us so far and your patience. So we look forward to getting these amendments approved. That's really all I have.
Okay. Great, thank you. Does your cat agree with the recommendation to reduce from 6 to 4?
This cat's driving me crazy. He likes sitting right on whatever I'm reading from too.
Well, that's okay. I think Joe Biden had a bunch of geese the other day, so but yeah. Not happen.
When we're in trouble, if my dog shows up, is when there's going to be trouble. Okay.
That's great. Okay, any final questions from members of the commission? Okay, hearing none, we'll move into deliberation. We've got a kind of a three-part process. The first is to deliberate, make a decision regarding the recommendation. And then this is a little unique, again, because of our schedule, we want to consider the findings of fact, which we'll, Amanda can explain later, it requires two motions. One is to suspend the rules. And then if that motion is approved, then we can actually debate and approve the findings of fact. Correct, Amanda?
That is correct.
Okay, great. So we'll open it up to the commission for deliberation. Commissioner Shattuck.
I just want to thank John and Public Works. You know, when you're on the Planning Commission, and I think Mike had some great questions for you last time, and it was just super to see you say, boy, you know, that's a good idea, a good thought. Come back, let's do a little change. And that willingness to kind of listen to things and do it, really appreciate it. So I thank Public Works for that effort, and I think you've done a great job of putting this together.
Thank you, sir.
Great. Any other comments?
I was just going to second. I agree 100% with what Mr. Shattuck just said. So I appreciate all the hard work and the speedy response to questions and issues that we've raised, and thank you.
Thank you.
Jim, Commissioner Benson? At least it was lit up. Maybe you didn't have a comment, I'm not sure.
Well, I missed the hearing on the 12th, but so I don't think I'll be able to participate in the vote, but I have also been impressed with the previous study session, and for years I worked with the Department of Public Works, and they've got some good people over there who do a lot of good things.
Great. Any other comments? I definitely agree with my colleagues. I think Public Works did an outstanding job. The text itself goes from a passive to more assertive explaining. You know, we just went through that process last year with corrective edits and that type of thing. So I think you did a fantastic job with the language itself. I appreciate you bearing with me as I go through like an engineer line by line. That's how I am. Going through the documents, and you answered all my questions about site distance and civil enforcement, the access issues, the bonding and liability, indemnification, the existing structures and grandfathering, the arterial roadways, the planter strips, which I wasn't expecting you to come back. I was expecting you to stay 6 feet, and that's okay. As Commissioner Shattuck mentioned, I think it's fantastic that you guys took the opportunity to go back and look at it, you know, and addressing the sidewalks too. The policies, you know, back again, same thing with policy and procedure, combination of things in various documents. And there's a lot of new sections in this document that I think are very helpful. You know, again, written as a template for engineers, but at the same time, it's written at a level where the layman can understand the policies, which I thought was a fantastic writing structure to be able to put that together. And you had new sections on roadway improvement responsibilities. Something I found interesting was the preservation of the survey monuments, because I actually know somebody that tried to move one at one point, and it's like, no, you need to check with the county before you start tampering with it. References to low impact development. So I support all of it. And then the overarching issue to me is roadway safety and the improvements. Again, my initial issue was site distance and signage and road interference and that type of thing. And I think you guys did a fantastic job with and this isn't just something that happened overnight. It's a culmination of many years. Your guys' great work to improve roadway safety, and I think that's codified in the new document. So congratulations.
Thank you. We really appreciate the input that we've gotten from you guys and from the citizens as a whole. The members of the Builders Association and some of the local consultants really provided us a lot of good input, and we appreciate what we got, because as you well know, it's really hard to get good public input on a document like this. So we do appreciate everyone's cooperation and support. It's been a long road.
Great, thank you. Any other comments? If not, the chair would entertain a motion.
I move we close deliberations and look to suspending the rules and allow consideration of findings of fact.
Amanda, would you prefer that be separate motions or one?
Yeah, so if you would get a motion to recommend approval, if that's what you choose, of the recommendation, and then once that's done, you can move to vote on whether to consider the findings of fact, and then if that's approved, then you can vote on the findings of fact if you'd like. So three separate.
Well, I'd recommend that the Planning Commission recommend approval to the County Commissioners of the changes in the road design standards.
Okay. We have a motion to approve as presented. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. I have a motion, a second. Okay. Sorry about that. I think I had a motorcycle going by. Motion and second to approve. Any discussion? Okay, hearing and seeing none, all those in favor of approving Title 11 Road Standards Code update, signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? And abstentions?
Benson.
Okay. Motion carries. Great. Thank you, and thanks again to the Public Works staff. We appreciate your time.
So now it would be a motion to consider the findings of fact at this meeting.
Correct. Has everybody had the chance to review the findings of fact? We had the original, and then because of the planter reduction from 6 feet to 4 feet, staff sent out earlier today, I believe, the revisions to the findings of fact. Okay. Entertain a motion to approve the findings of fact.
Move to approve the finding of the facts.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Any discussion? All those in favor of approving the findings, effects, conclusions, and recommendations of the Kitsap County Planning Commission?
Actually, we're just voting to consider the findings of fact first.
Oh, sorry, that's right.
There we go.
Correction. Already made a mistake, and I'm not even using my allergy medicine. Good grief. So now we're just suspending the rules of procedure.
Yes.
Okay, so unless I heard it wrong, the original motion was to approve the findings. So we need to withdraw the original motion and second, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well. So will the maker and second withdraw the motion?
Okay, great.
So now we'll entertain a motion to suspend the rules to consider the findings of fact.
Thank you.
Well, I'll get all over this one. I move to suspend the rules.
Okay, we have a motion to suspend the rules to consider the findings of fact at the same meeting. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? And I will note we'll need a unanimous vote. If we don't have one, it'll have to be deferred till the next meeting. Correct, Amanda?
That is correct.
Unanimous vote, correct. Okay, of those present. Okay, any discussion? Okay, all those in favor of approving the motion, signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Aye. Okay, hearing none, any abstentions?
Nope.
Okay, motion carries. Great. Now we can entertain a motion to approve the findings of fact, conclusions, and recommendations as presented. Is there a
move to Move to adopt the finding of facts as put forward.
Okay, is there a second?
One second.
Okay, we have a motion and second to approve the finding of fact, conclusions, and recommendations of the Kitsap County Planning Commission to the Department of Community Development regarding proposed code amendments to Kitsap County Code Title 11, Roads, Highways, and Bridges. All those in favor signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Any abstentions?
Svensson.
Okay, motion carries. All in favor with one abstention. Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks again.
I want to know if Jim's really raising his hand.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good.
I promise.
Great. Okay. Next item, H, work study, stormwater design manual update.
I'll kick it off for the team. Good evening, commissioners. My name is Andrew Silva. I'm the assistant director who oversees long-range planning, natural resources, as well as development services engineering in the Department of Community Development. Tonight, we have others in attendance as this is a coordination effort between Public Works Stormwater Utility, so the roads design standards that the Planning Commission heard over the past couple meetings was the roads division of Public Works. Tonight, we have attendees from Public Works Utility Division, Stormwater Group specifically, so as well as the consultant team that has helped us craft the revisions you see before you, as well as moving forward. So just to make some introductions, we have Dave Tucker, who's the Assistant Director over Utilities and Public Works. We have Michelle Philly, and Michelle, I do not recall off the top of my head your program title over in Public Works, so I apologize for that. We have Scott Diener, who oversees, as the manager for Development Services Engineering in DCD, who is the group tasked to review applications in conformance with the Stormwater Design Manual. We have Michelle Perdue, who is the Stormwater Program Manager over at the utility, as well as Sean O'Leary, who is the supervisor in DSC and DCD, as well as two consultants who have been critical in making the revisions necessary to move this forward in conformance with ecology guidelines and our permitting requirements. So Robin Kirschbaum for RKI, as well as Rebecca. And I apologize, Rebecca, I'm going to slaughter your last name as I never had to pronounce it before. Dugopolsky? From her.
Pretty close. Dugopolsky. Yep.
Sorry about that.
No worries. Yeah. No, that was really close.
So part of this is kind of our first work study session on a very technical document. Commissioner Beam, you outlined kind of a series of questions, including how does this relate to affordable housing? We hope the presentation tonight will answer many of your questions on why we are doing this and the requirements behind it. In addition to one of the elements of affordable housing that we have to take into consideration, not just when it comes to stormwater requirements, but all the other requirements that are passed through federal as well as state regulations that are implemented at the local level, in addition to case law that plays a role in the development and the growth that we see within our communities. So as part of how to provide affordable housing, we have to work within the confines of the Growth Management Act, the case law associated with that. So for example, max lot size has been a very debatable topic, as well as meeting minimum densities per the comp plan. All those elements play a role in how to work within all those competing demands. And I will say they're not prioritized by the state and what comes before, but part of our advocacy at state level, whether that's through our various associations, this various state agencies that we have to work with, or through the state legislature, is bringing up those topics consistently and regularly and how this is balanced with affordable housing, but also the other many requirements we're tasked to do, protecting the environment, protecting water quality and quantity, et cetera. So with that, we do have a presentation before you, but I hope the Planning Commission has received the briefing materials, which included the executive summary, a first draft red line revision to the existing stormwater manual, as well as a summary of key changes. Please let me know if you did not receive that. And also part of our presentation, we'll go over the schedule and the hopes of a revised second draft, which will include also code consistency edits.
Angie, sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to find out, on the executive summary, is there a particular reason when you differentiated the process with the Planning Commission versus the County Commissioners? The second item in the list is a meeting with the KBA, and the Planning Commission isn't part of that process. So I'm wondering, it's not a big deal, but I just thought for the executive summary, maybe that should be the first item, would be public outreach with that meeting listed, and then the Planning Commission having its items, and then the county Board of County Commissioners with their items.
Okay, fair enough. I think, well, part of the presentation will outline outreach efforts that assisted in the first draft, as well as a workshop to acquire additional comments on that first draft, so it leads to additional revisions before we go to the formal Planning Commission process. And I'm sorry, Chair Lyson, what were your other questions?
It was just a comment. It's not a big deal, but if it were, rather than having two sections, the process for the Planning Commission and then the process for the Board of County Commissioners, even though they're separate, and it's okay to put it in there, the staff's meeting with the Kitsap Building Association wasn't part of, it was during the same time period, but it was not an official event of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. I just don't want anybody to get the impression that that was something that we encouraged or were a part of, because if that were the case, we'd want to invite the tribes and the environmental groups and any other stakeholder group.
No, that's fair. I think the date that we ended up on the KBA workshop that actually slid, we were planning to have that in March, but COVID delayed in-person meetings, and we're trying to kick off and working with KBA virtually. And again, as we go through the proposed changes and the reasons why this is extremely technical, and also the tribes play a huge role in the drafting of what happens at the ecology level and their input into that, to that manual drafting itself. So I appreciate that. Thank you for bringing that forward. So with that, for tonight, we do have kind of a tag team approach to the overall presentation, which we have a PowerPoint presentation, and I believe Robin's going to share that on the screen, but we'll present between myself, Mr. Tucker, as well as Ms. Kirschbaum on different elements of that review based upon our expertise. And we do have our staff within our respective departments here and available to answer any specific questions you may have. So with that, any questions?
And are you seeing my screen?
I'm seeing it. Is everyone else?
Yes.
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 Okay.
All right.
So if there's no any questions, I'll kick off the presentation. Okay with everybody?
Yes.
Okay. So Robin, can you click to this next slide, please? So the presentation we hope to accomplish and share information with the Planning Commission tonight is, again, just to provide some background context of the 2016 Stormwater Design Manual updates, as well as consistency code changes associated with that, and also answer why modify the stormwater design and the associated code, what is ecology outline in rulemaking, etc., and as well as what kind of key summary on the first draft that you have before you, and all the public outreach and conversation before you. Oftentimes during presentations, we answer questions during the presentation, or if we want to wait till the end, I think we're pretty flexible on that, but I just want to be respectful of everybody's time, as this is pretty technical in nature. So I want to make sure we respect folks' time, but also answer questions that do arise. Next slide, Ms. Robin.
All right. And Angie, are you seeing notes? I'm seeing no notes on one screen and notes on another. Are you?
I'm not seeing any notes, but I think for me on my slides, I think I'm okay. I can't speak for your section, Robin. You got the heavy stuff.
No, I don't need the notes. I just wanted to make sure they weren't distracting our viewers. Great.
Fair enough. So again, just recognizing the contributions to the first draft before you. So this was a work collaboration between two county departments, the Department of Community Development as well as Public Works. And we'll outline our different roles further in the presentation, as well as the two consultants that are here this evening I mentioned before. I also want to recognize the assistance not only Access Land Consulting, which is Bernie Ketworthy, formerly of Team 4 Engineering, who went off on her own in her own consulting group. She was identified by the Kitsap Building Association as their point of contact to help us guide us through this drafting process. And I also want to recognize critical to kind of organizing comments and feedback from the engineers of that association, so providing forward. And I will mention, and I'll get to it later in the presentation, KBA did send us comments as well as questions late afternoon. We are looking at it as a team. We plan to respond to each of them, but at this time we're still working through that, and we will share that information as well as the county responses to KBA, but as well as the Planning Commission and anyone else who would like to view that. Next slide. I think this is Ms. Robin.
All right, so I'll review a little bit about the history of the 2016 code and Kitsap County Stormwater Design Manual update, which I worked on in 2016. So our process was very similar to the process that we followed this time around. It took a little over a year. We began with assembling a team and examining all the current codes and or the codes that needed to be reviewed in the Stormwater Design Manual, and doing a gap analysis to compare what the ecology manual was requiring at that time, and prioritize changes that need to be made, and went through a similar outreach process, and finalized the updates to the manual and the code in the fall of 2016. And then I went through an adoption phase between through December 2016, where the adoption phase consisted of trainings and updating user materials like permit applications, brochures, policies, et cetera. So it's a very similar process to what we're doing this time. So the changes in the 2016 manual were a heavier lift than they are this time around, and that's because there were new requirements at that time to incorporate low impact development and make that the preferred and commonly used approach to new and redevelopment. So we did a much more extensive review and update of titles 12, 16, and 17, Stormwater Code, Subdivision, and Zoning Code, to look for any barriers to implementing low impact development and help achieve that goal of making it the preferred and commonly used approach. And what that really boils down to, with most of those code updates, it was associated with trying to reduce the amount of vegetation loss, reduce the amount of impervious surfaces, and reduce the amount of stormwater runoff generated on developed sites. The Stormwater Manual was also had a much more extensive update in 2016, again, because of the need to incorporate low impact development into the planning and design of new development and redevelopment projects. The updates at that time were for consistency with ecology. So while it was a heavier lift at that time, it was for the purpose of being consistent with the ecology manual. And then we also made some updates that were county specific regarding updating submittal requirements. And I believe that David was going to review this slide and the next two.
Good evening. As Angie said before, my name is David Tucker. I'm the Assistant Director of Public Works for the Utilities. Oftentimes people ask, why are we doing this? Why now? From a federal standpoint, the Clean Water Act was passed back in the 1970s. It instructs the Environmental Protection Agency to issue these National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permits, which you see on your screen as NPDES. Within the state of Washington, they delegate that authority for non-federal lands down to the State Department of Ecology. And ecology uses that guidance, the federal guidance, along with the guidance they get from the legislature, which is in RCW 9048, to guide them in this process. Permits first became applicable to Kitsap back in 2007. The permits are normally five-year increments. The current permit we're on now started July of last year and will go through July of 2024. Within it is an appendix called Appendix 1, which contains the regulatory requirements the county has to apply for all development and redevelopment on public and private lands or public and private projects. That's really our guidance. It directs us to have certain code language, but then it also directs that the stormwater facilities that are made to comply with that code language have to be designed in accordance with the current standard for the state, which is the 2019 Stormwater Management Manual for Western Washington, or a design manual that the state has deemed to be equivalent. We also use some guidance we got from the Board of County Commissioners in 2009. They passed the Water as a Resource Policy, and we affirmed it back in 2016. Go to the next slide, Robin. The permit does not strictly apply to every single bit of the county. For phase two permittees, which the county is one of many in the state, the federal guideline is it has to apply to census urbanized areas. And those are areas defined by each 10 years in the census. It's based on a bunch of density calculations. It starts in Bremerton and goes out like a blob. And if those density calculations keep on saying yes, then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and finally it ends at certain spots. So you can see the orange area there. It shows you all that urbanized area. The state then adds on urban growth areas that are adjacent to cities that are also connected to these census urbanized areas. And the state's logic in that is where growth is going to go. So that is why they want these regulations applied there. Our board has given us the guidance to apply everything in the permit, which even goes beyond what we're talking about tonight, uniformly across the county. Many reasons for that, most of which is that water doesn't necessarily flow just in these little colored areas. And there's also some growth management and impacts of having lesser regulation out in the rural area versus the urbanized areas. You can go to next slide, Robin. The last one, just a quick thing about the Water Resource Policy and how it really relates to what we're talking about today. Within that policy, the board directs the Department of Community Development to establish development regulations and update the comprehensive plan to follow the guiding principles within the policy. And the two that are very specific to this are 3.1, which is to preserve natural hydrology by preventing the creation of stormwater runoff and reducing the pollutant load within it. And 3.4, which is to maintain natural flow regime, which reduces runoff pollutant carrying capacity and the destructive force of that runoff. So that's one of the things we look at when we are updating these codes. Are we still abiding by that guidance that the Board of County Commissioners have given us? I'll turn it back over to Angie for the next slide.
Angie, sorry to interrupt you, but we have a request from a commissioner that everybody go to mute unless you're the speaker, because there's too much feedback coming through to some of the panelists. So if you don't mind, please go to mute, and then, of course, the speaker can switch. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Eliason. So as we shared before in the executive summary, as well as prior to, and what Amanda showed on the screen as a tentative Planning Commission topic, we, as you see before you on the slide, we are here at the kind of the first formal work study before the Planning Commission on the first draft itself. Again, this first draft was originally released in early March, as well as seeking feedback from the public early on, as well as more of the boots on the ground, the engineers, on what that draft implication may be, as well as answer any questions on that. As we move forward, there are certain procedural steps that we do have to meet, including noticing requirements, et cetera. Since our kind of workshop, as well as feedback from kind of engineers, we are working right now on a second draft, including consistency and housekeeping edits that we'll talk about a little bit later in the presentation, moving forward, which will be the basis for the public process move and legislative process through the Planning Commission, as well as the Board of County Commissioners moving forward. Part of that review is, again, I mentioned KBA submitted some comments to us yesterday, as well as questions. We are working through that and how that would be, where appropriate, addressed in either the Title 12, which is our stormwater code, or the second draft moving forward. Our goal tentatively is to have a formal public hearing before the Planning Commission on the second draft, as well as the code. I believe our target is June 16th. So the second draft and everything else will be available the first week of June, and we will pass that along to the Planning Commission, as well as make publicly available to anyone on the project's website, as well as the Kitsap Building Association. Following the work study session, again, we move forward, and like everything else, we move forward with receiving public testimony, whether verbal or written, as well as working through deliberation and recommendation with the Planning Commission and formalizing through a findings of fact. Following that, in July, we hope to move forward in the board's legislative process and start a very similar step. Start with a work study session. Here was the feedback received by the Planning Commission as well as public, and work through that with the target adoption in August timeframe. Our goal, again, because this is a very technical document, we want to provide enough opportunity for folks to get familiar with the proposed changes before application submittal. So while the adoption target is in August, we hope that during the fall months to have internal and external training workshops, as well as update any brochures if necessary before the ordinance effective date, the beginning of January 1st, 2021. Ms. Robin?
All right. So I'll review some of the updates in the 2019 Stormwater Management Manual for Western Washington, which is the ecology manual. And these updates are what drove the majority of the updates we made in the Kitsap County Stormwater Design Manual. So some of the key changes. There were usability enhancements. One of the most important ones is that they developed an online manual for the first time. So rather than having a printed copy or having to navigate a PDF, there's a very easy to navigate online manual, which really kind of brings the barrier down of navigating and working through your design. Should hopefully be something that will ease the design process for designers. And we emulated that and are also working on an online manual for the first time for the Kitsap County Stormwater Design Manual. Ecology, in their manual, they also did a lot of consolidation and clarification and reorganization and really streamlined the information, again, making it a lot easier to use. And we mimicked a lot of that in our updated stormwater design manual. They did make changes to modeling requirements, continuous simulation modeling requirements, which are what we use to size conveyance facilities. As well as best management practices for on-site stormwater management, flow control, and water quality treatment. So there were some changes there that came from ecology. They updated thresholds for replaced hard surfaces for redevelopment projects that we also mimic. They updated minimum requirements number 2, number 5, and number 7. So number 2 is construction stormwater pollution prevention. Minimum requirement number 5 is on-site stormwater management. And minimum requirement number 7 is flow control. They added new source control best management practices, or BMPs, provided updated wetland guidance. They incorporated underground injection control, or UIC, program guidance into the manual. That used to be a separate guideline, and that became incorporated into the manual, and some updates were made. And they provided expanded guidance for regional stormwater facilities, which are optional. Those are not required. So based on the changes that ecology made, the vast majority of the updates that we made to the Kitsap County Stormwater Design Manual are stemming from those ecology updates. For usability enhancements, we are creating an online manual. So we did not change the organization of the Kitsap County manual. We still have two volumes. Volume 1 lays out the minimum requirements, and we made updates to that volume really just only for consistency with ecology. There were no new county requirements or changes in the county requirements associated with minimum requirements. Volume 2 is where we have the design standards and submittal requirements. So chapters 1 through 4, chapter 1 is submittal requirements. Chapter 4 is command design requirements. Some of the key changes that we made were we made some fairly minor updates to submittal requirements, oftentimes for clarification or streamlining that process. We added local amendments for source control BMPs, where the ecology BMP definitions needed some amendments. We clarified the approved continuous modeling requirements for consistency with ecology, updated design criteria for pipe, outfall features, and tight line systems. We added some figures that were previously online only and were not incorporated in the manual. Now they're all incorporated, which should make the manual much easier to use. Continuing on with volume 2, chapter 5 is the chapter on stormwater best management practices. Here we updated the runoff treatment BMP selection flowchart, which you see on the right-hand side. All the updates that we made there are for consistency with ecology. We significantly clarified the language around dispersion, design of dispersion BMPs, which should make it easier for designers to figure out feasibility and how to design those BMPs. We updated infiltration BMP setback requirements for consistency with updated Kitsap County ordinance. Generally, the effect was to increase setback requirements. We added a section on runoff treatment prior to infiltration BMPs. These are not really new requirements, but what used to be referenced to the ecology manual is now better integrated into the Kitsap County manual. We added a section on BMPs classified as underground injection controls. Again, this better aligns us with the ecology manual, but as I mentioned before, ecology did make updates to UIC requirements. We also updated BMP design criteria. The updates made here were associated with referencing Kitsap County code, in some cases simplifying the design criteria for BMPs, like dispersion trenches became simpler to design. And I mentioned that we added some new figures. So here's an example. I mentioned flow dispersion trench. This is a BMP that BMP that got some of the most significant updating, and it was really for the purpose of making it easier for designers to use it, making the structures lighter weight and allowing more flexibility for how you could configure this. Another example is we added a figure here that wasn't in the manual before for dumpster areas, showing the covered, burned, and plumbed areas, so how those areas should be treated. Continuing on in volume 2, chapter 6 is the chapter on wetlands protection. We updated the reference to ecology's updated wetland protection criteria. Didn't make any changes that weren't consistent with ecology there. Minor revisions only for chapter 7 through 9, or 7 and 9, I'm sorry. And chapter 8 is the chapter on critical drainage areas. The updated, the maps of critical drainage areas did get updated in the first public draft. Those are being updated again currently by Public Works. And Michelle can speak to that if folks have questions on that. And also updated modeling guidance associated with critical drainage areas in chapter 8. Finally, on the manual updates, of course, we updated the glossary. We had a lot of new definitions that we needed to add and acronyms. A lot of the appendices were updated for consistency with the main body. Appendix F is hydrologic hydraulic modeling. We've incorporated tables and figures. from the 2010 manual that were not in the 2016 manual. In Appendix G, that's subsurface investigation and infiltration testing for infiltration BMPs. We updated terminology and references, added UIC well language, and tried to simplify the procedural guidelines to make them clearer. That's an area that greatly simplifies use of the manual, because if those standards aren't clear, that can become a roadblock to simplifying design. And finally, in Appendix H, LID BMP infeasibility criteria. We updated those criteria only for consistency with ecology. Didn't make any other significant updates aside from that. Finally, Title 12 is the only code title that we reviewed and updated this year. We didn't need to get into Title 16 and 17 like we did in the previous update. And the updates that we made this time around were generally very minor. They were housekeeping updates, like making definitions consistent with the updated Kitsap County manual or with the updated ecology manual, and updating other code references. And there is a public draft that should be getting published on June 5.
Thank you, Robin.
Andrew, I believe you are going to take it back from here.
Yeah, I think I hit on a number of things, but again, just want to reiterate and recognize Bernie Kentworthy's assistance as we crafted the draft before you, as well as coordinating outreach to the engineering committee to provide the comments that they did yesterday afternoon. Again, we will be responding to that and providing that to the Planning Commission soon, as well as kind of the input and feedback we received at the April 20th workshop with KBA members. Again, just going over the first draft, what those summary of changes are, as well as why are these changes being made, and some good input, especially on the critical area, critical drainage area maps that Robin mentioned, that we are working on revisions to based upon that feedback and subsequent kind of review internally as a team, whether that should be modified, and we agree. So we will be seeing those changes in the second draft itself. And just reiterating points before, this draft, the first draft before you, was made available at the beginning of March to ensure kind of early and continuous kind of outreach on what those changes may be, and kind of the back and forth with the boots on the ground, the technical experts that really are the users of this manual as applications come in. That also, once we posted on the public website, that went to every, I believe, Public Works as well as DCD user groups who signed up for Gov Delivery Blast. So that was broad brush, that included anybody and everybody who signs up, including, I know, a number of tribal entities do take a look and pay attention, and will pay attention when we issue the SEPA determination on the second draft itself. And again, just continuous communication with KBA leadership on each stage, as well as we move through the schedule and drafts as we move forward. Next slide, Ms. Robin. So to kind of just reiterate schedule moving forward, the first week of June is our target for second draft manual, as well as Title 12 code consistency edits release. That will be provided to the Planning Commission, as well as highlight what changed from the first draft to the second draft. So we track that, as well as, again, make sure that we are highlighting the changes between as we move forward in the process. With the Planning Commission hopefully having a tentative target date for June 16th public hearing to welcome verbal and written testimony on the proposal itself. And then wrapping up kind of the legislative adoption process with the commissioner, starting in July but ending in August, with plenty of time prior to ordinance effective dates in the beginning of this coming year, with back and forth internal and external trainings and any additional internal administrative edits we need to make to brochures to ensure consistency, as well as getting the right information to folks as they walk, hopefully back into the public building soon enough. So with that, we're happy to answer any questions the Planning Commission has. And again, I welcome all members of the project team, including Robin Tucker, as well as myself, but others here to provide feedback or answer any questions.
Great, thank you. There we go, back to full screen. Okay, commissioners, any comments or questions?
I believe Richard has some questions. He's trying to unmute.
Oh. Well, while he's doing that, I'll put one out there. If you could answer,
just
how
second,
much?
Mike.
Is he? Oh, he's out. Okay, go ahead. Gotcha.
All right. I'm sorry. As I understand, what we're doing is we're taking guidance that was designed for urban areas, and we're applying it to the entire county. And the goal is to reduce barriers to low impact development. Another way of saying that is to increase the cost of development, is what it looks to me. We're doing things like increasing setbacks. We just went through the critical areas ordinance on addressing wetlands issues. I don't know how long we had a stormwater manual before we changed it in 2016. And now we're, Dave, I don't know how, what was it? It was a 1990 stormwater manual before we dealt in 2016, wasn't it? And now we're changing it in 4 years again. And it looks like we're gonna have to change it for the NPDES renewal every year or every 5 years. And then also to address ecology's guidance. And so I'm looking, I kind of mirror what Commissioner's saying, and that is, whoa, we just went through this incredible change in 2016. And now, although we're kind of saying, now we're just kind of working on the edges. Boy, it sure looks to me like we're taking something and putting it into areas that maybe doesn't fit well. So my initial reaction is the same as Commissioner Beam. Why are we doing this? Isn't this increase the cost of development, decrease the availability of affordable housing, and say, geez, we're applying it against areas beyond what it was intended.
Yes, I'll take the first crack at that. The changes that we're talking about today have, from a cost perspective, are very small comparative to what is currently required. In most cases, most developments won't even notice a change. The reason we do it is to be in compliance with federal and state law. So I mean, that's what the county commissioners tell us to do, so that's what we do. I mean, it's up to them whether they want to do it or not, but it is a process. This is about the fourth process I've been through with this. We started changing it in 2010 based on the 2007 permit, and we've done it every permit cycle since then. The 2010 was the most dramatic as far as cost to the developer and the homeowner who ends up buying the home. I think this is probably the least significant change we've had over that time period.
Okay, any other comments? Commissioner Beam. You have to unmute.
You want that too? For a typical house development, how much of the cost in the permitting process is a stormwater design plan that has to, all the professional engineers? What percentage of the permit is that? Are we dealing 2% or are we dealing 60%?
Sean, can you answer that just based on applications coming in through a site development activity permit? Ballpark it.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. So we have two versions of engineered stormwater plans that can be submitted with a building permit. The less obtrusive and costing one is what we call the Simplified Engineered Drainage Review Plan. And that is for projects that are located in a critical drainage area, but are less than the allowed amount of impervious, as mentioned within the code and design manual. That fee is $1,040 to the cost of the building permit. And the review of that material is under the building permit. So the review times are quite a bit lower than what a traditional site development activity permit would require. So to answer that question on the building permit side for something that is required to be engineered but done through the building permit, it's $1,050, I apologize. Now, if they have to do a site development activity permit, meaning they meet the requirements of a large project and have to meet minimum requirements 1 through 9. An example is if you live in an urban area and your property is only allowed 5,000 square feet of impervious surface and your proposed development is greater than that, then you meet the definition of a large project and are required to submit a site development activity permit, which the fee for that is in the range of $2,800. That's the permit fee to Kitsap County. Again, both of these projects are engineered projects, so I do not know the cost of what the engineer would have, but those are the fees for Kitsap County and the permitting process.
I submit that that's probably the minor part of the fee. The cost of the engineering is huge. What is it, if I was going to, you know, do something to my property, how much do I have to pay this engineer for this development permit?
Good question, sir. And that really depends on the amount of engineering required on the property. I actually can give you a real case scenario because I am currently in the process of trying to build a home and I am required to do a simplified engineered drainage plan because my property has some critical area slopes on it. And so I had to hire a professional engineer in the private sector, and it is luckily I have some trunk lines that I can connect to and didn't have to or don't have to build any stormwater facilities, but it is mine was somewhere in the range of $2,500 to $3,000 for that, my own personal one.
There's two sides to that coin. There's what the county charges, and there's what the engineer charges. And is anybody monitoring that overall for the county to say, how are we affecting housing prices with all these requirements? Is that even something we look at?
Well, that's part of a lot of our back and forth that I do as a department. We have a collegial as well as collaborative relationship with the Kitsap Building Association and many other associations, including the Realtors Association, and that back and forth on what the cost is, the true cost, not just what it charges for our review as part of implementing ecology's rules, but the true cost to development. And again, that it's something that we factor in, but again, part of the rules and the draft before you are requirements that are passed through to local government. So whether or not I understand that there are concerns associated with that, but I don't necessarily know how as a local agency we'll be able to not implement that without any type of financial repercussions to, in addition to concerns of addressing our permit issuance from ecology. So it's conversations that we always have. We like to stay in tune with the cost of development and what that is and what we can do at our own sphere of influence and review, how we can streamline that as best we can, but also cover the cost of operations as well. So it is a balancing act and something we do take into consideration. However, when we have to implement these local rules that are passed down from us, this is not necessarily a factor in which we have to, is a factor as part of the deliberation or adoption of it and changing of those rules and requiring an engineer or not. Oftentimes we do need the PE stamp, and that's the requirement.
Understand, but is there a program at the county to monitor these increases in costs so that we can provide feedback to our legislators so that we can say, hey, we're complying, but this is what it's costing us, and this is just jacked up the cost of a house, $30,000.
I wouldn't say there's a definite program, but part of our legislative priorities list, each legislative session, as well as communication at our Washington State Association of Counties, we do provide the feedback we receive from Kitsap Building Association or other associations on what this really means and tie it back to, while you implement these rules at a state level, these have implications on what it costs for a family to build a single family residence.
So is that a quote monitoring program that would be useful for the county to have?
I think it's always good. I don't necessarily know off the top of my head what that monitoring program would be, as well as how to sustain it with appropriate staffing resources to make sure that that monitoring program can be effective as well as it can be. Again, with the current situation of we're all facing, including Public Works, we're all facing current conversations of hiring freezes. I don't know if that is something that we can move forward as part of this proposal before you.
The other half of a monitoring program is, how do we define success? You know, we implement this whole thing. We're now 5 years down the road, we're going to do it again. How do we know that we've succeeded in anything? Do we even measure the improvement in the streams, the improvement in the waters, all those other things? How do we define success?
I believe that's part of the permit requirement. I know Mr. Tucker would like to respond.
The state looks at a larger picture across the entire Puget Sound and does water sampling and some other monitoring to see what the are. Locally, we do a tremendous amount of monitoring. We work with the Public Utility District to find out how our streams are performing, what the impacts of all what we're doing, not only the private development, but the fixes we put in with our stormwater utility and other things. Unfortunately, a lot of the timelines in order to see impacts are long. You can't see an impact in a year. Oftentimes, you need a decade of data. Get a lot of impact. Our health district does a lot of monitoring and has been able to clean up a lot of streams and other places that are impacted by development. So I think we're doing a lot and we're seeing a lot of positive out there, but there's still a lot of work to be done and there's still a lot of unknowns.
I bring this up because in stormwater management, what we've seen is the Suquamish Indians have come up with the fact that if not properly protected, the streams can be deadly within 24 hours after a runoff event. They aren't quite sure, and the studies are going on to figure out what's causing that, but that's all roadway runoff. And we got to make sure that we're doing something with the roadways and how they're impacting the streams just as much as what we're doing to the individual development. We got to look at what the sources of pollution are and make sure we're addressing the right issues.
These apply to both public and private developments. So roads are public developments, so they have to comply with all these standards as well. And we spend probably $5 to $6 million a year going back and retrofitting public infrastructure and doing water quality improvements. Manchester, I'm sure you've seen the Manchester Water Park, that is about 120 acres of land that drains to that. We have a similar one in Silverdale, it's about 120 acres, and we're currently working on one in Suquamish, that will be over 230 acres, and one in Kingston, that will be in the 100 acre range. So I think we're doing a lot to try to make it so it's just not up to the new person developing, but go back and look at everything that's being developed and try to retrofit it.
I've got two part. Robin mentioned earlier the local amendments, and I'm curious, I know it could probably vary from administration to administration, but how much flexibility does Department of Ecology give local jurisdictions in drafting local amendments? That's the first part.
And Rebecca, you might want to chime in on this, but I'll start by saying that Ecology provides a fair amount of discretion to the local jurisdiction in terms of design requirements for best management practices. I was mentioning local amendments for source control BMPs, and they do provide discretion for those, as well as water quality treatment and flow control BMPs. So we have, wherever we thought, you know, there was a need, we've made minor, you know, adaptations, like I mentioned, to the dispersion trench and to those source control BMPs that I mentioned. We also add code references like fencing requirements for detention ponds. Those are, you know, typically locally driven. Conveyance design requirements are entirely locally driven. So there's a fair amount of discretion.
Great, thank you. And then the second part is in the current revision, can you give us an estimate, a ballpark estimate of what percentage of the requirements are mandatory? And we know the procedure is very similar to critical areas, et cetera. The agency provides general guidance. Some are optional consideration, others are mandatory, but can you give us a ballpark of the current revisions that by percentage that are mandatory?
Well, the stormwater design manual and Title 12 for that matter lay out minimum requirements. There are 9 minimum requirements, and those derive from ecology, and we have a nearly exact match with what the ecology manual requires for those requirements, and those are our minimum requirements. They're not; those are not optional. There's not. I can't think of anything that's optional in the manual. When you hit certain thresholds for new development and redevelopment, I suppose if you were below thresholds, it would be optional to add flow control or treatment, for instance. But when you exceed certain thresholds of hard surfaces or converted vegetated areas, then you trigger certain minimum requirements, and those put you down a path of evaluating the feasibility of certain courses and implementing what is feasible.
Chair Eliason, I think you are really asking how many of these changes in the manual are driven locally and how many were driven by ecology. Is that what you were asking?
Correct.
I would say 90%+ are ecology, just adapting the manual to something that ecology changed.
And okay, both answers
less
than
10% is local.
Great. And then I'm like Columbo, I said two, but I'm coming back. One more thing. Back to Commissioner Beam's comment at the beginning of the meeting, I would imagine staff at different points spends time evaluating what the impacts are going to be. What's the outcome? Anybody that's a good project manager is going to look at what's presented to see what's the final outcome. You may not know all the details of financial impacts, et cetera, but you have a general idea. But I imagine even through this process, haven't you looked at each issue from a perspective of, is there a better way of handling it versus, you know, market incentive, market-based approach versus a regulatory approach? I imagine that's part of your deliberative process, correct? From time to time.
I think just tack on what Mr. Tucker mentioned, and I look like he wants to speak as well. 90% are driven by ecology and minimum requirements, so there's very little local discretion on what we can do. I can't speak to whether we had a very specific market-driven, incentive-driven approach, because again, there's certain thresholds when you meet, it triggers this path, and that's a requirement through ecology. So again, the flexibility is a little bit limited here.
Right, great, thank you. Okay, any other commissioner comments?
Just real quick, I'm following up on that, Angie, but the one thing we do have control over locally is the area to which this is going to be applied. And we've said, we don't wanna stay inside the census tracts, we don't wanna stay inside the UGAs, we're gonna apply it to the whole county. Am I correct in that?
I believe that's part of the water as a resource, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Tucker, and the guidance that the Board of County Commissioners adopted via resolution to expand into, correct? So that is a local discretion. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Tucker, I don't want to provide inaccurate information.
Yes, the Board of County Commissioners applies the entire permit, which has many more things in it than just regulatory over development in the entire county. Things like how we use pesticides when we maintain our parks, to how we do road maintenance, to a sundry of other things. Since water is all around us, they figured all the water is just as valuable, so we apply the same standards across the county. Obviously, we do a lot more work in Silverdale than we do in Seabeck just because of the nature of the beast.
And that policy was adopted by the board at that time in 2009. Our current board, who went through the 2016 Stormwater Design Manual update, that policy applied then and was part of those discussions. To my knowledge, the commissioners have not asked us to revise that policy.
Yeah, they actually reaffirmed it in 2016, the three current commissioners that we have.
Back to Commissioner Shattuck's point, how much of a difference in geographic area are we talking about, the prior versus adopting it countywide?
What is the difference in geographic area? Is that your question?
Yep.
On the slideshow, we didn't bring it back up, but one of the slides I showed, all the colored area was area that we're required to apply it to, and all the white area was area that we're not required by state or federal guidance to apply it to. But we apply it to the entire county.
Okay, I can take a look at that.
Do analysis to find out what that is, but you can visually look at it.
Okay, great, thank you.
I'm happy to share that screen, if that's helpful, that map, just quickly, if I can do it correctly without messing up. Where is, there we go. Can everybody see that?
Yep.
Okay. So yellow is our designated urban, unincorporated urban growth areas. Gray is cities. And the orange is the census urbanized areas.
Great, thank you.
I have a quick question regarding the low impact development standards. I guess my question is related to, I think I heard someone say that the code applies to both private development, private and commercial development, as well as public infrastructure. And I guess I'm asking what low impact development measures has the county implemented in recent years that they find successful? One of the issues I have with not issues, but concerns I guess I have with groundwater injection is the groundwater table around here is fairly high. And you know, we're talking about infiltrating stormwater into the ground. How feasible has that been? Has that been an idea that has been floated around regularly in this county, or has Kitsap County Public Works had issues with that in some of the stuff that they've done? Just maybe speak to that a little bit, if you would.
Sure, we've used low impact development in a lot of our road projects. Most recent one that comes to mind for me is the Ridgetop project that's currently being done, the first phase, and now we're in phase two. The median was converted to a bioretention facility, which is a low impact development technique. We've put in a couple of pervious pavement local access roads. We've been testing those over time to make sure that they still work. We've worked with parks and put pervious parking in a couple of park locations. Those seem to still be working just fine. Those are ones that I just can think of off the top of my head.
Okay, any other comments, questions? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to our next agenda item. Thank you, staff. Appreciate your being here this evening and look forward to seeing you at the next meeting.
Thank you, commissioners. Have a good evening.
Yep. So the next item is
item
five. Thank you, commissioners.
Great, thank you. Item I for the good of the order. Jim, your microphone was on, it's off, okay. Any comments, any announcements, any follow-up? Amanda, do you have anything before we adjourn?
Nothing that comes to mind.
Okay, great. So we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
We're slowing down, we're getting better. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, with motion and second to adjourn, all those in favor, say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? Meeting adjourned 6:59 p.m. according to my time. Great to see y'all. And we'll see
you. Can you abstain from ending a meeting? Is that a thing?
Aaron, you just stay there. Just wait. We'll be back.
I'll be here in 2 weeks. Same clothes, the whole gig. It's part of my quarantine look. The hair will be another inch longer.
I think everybody.
Aaron, do you have pants on?
This is a don't ask, don't tell meeting, Joe.
I think all of us spoke except Commissioner Molly. You've got to say something, Amy.
I did introduce myself at the beginning.
That's right.
Hey.
Correction. Yep.
Yep. My neighbor is doing some deck demolition, so I had to be on mute for the most part.
Great.
I'm going to bring you artwork for the corner of wherever you're sitting so it doesn't look like you're one tie away from solitary confinement.
Amy, how's the cabin coming along?
It's coming along well. I've been a little distracted. I got a kitten last week, so I didn't go down there this weekend, but it's doing good.
All right, everyone, have a great couple of weeks.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Good night.
Mike, great job. Thank you.
Good night. Great.